Assalamu alaikum. This is Radio Pakistan. Listeners, this is your program Perspective from Radio Pakistan's News and Current Affairs channel, Islamabad Station. The program is simultaneously broadcast from Radio Pakistan's Islamabad at 11:52 kHz, from Lahore at 13:32 kHz, from Karachi at 6:39 kHz, from Quetta at 7:56 kHz, and from Peshawar at 11:70 kHz. Coordinator for today's program, Mudassir Hussain. Sound engineer, Khurram Iqbal. Program in charge, Chaudhry Zameer Ashraf. Listeners' Perspective is dedicated to issues of national and international importance, but on every Wednesday, Radio Pakistan News and Current Affairs Channel, in collaboration with United Nations Islamabad, broadcast a special program to highlight the working of United Nations in Pakistan. And in this connection, today we have been joined by honorable guests from the United Nations, Mr. Neil Bune. He is resident coordinator and humanitarian coordinator, United Nations Development Pakistan. We have also been joined by Ms. Heli Usikela, head of office, United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. We have also been honored by the presence of Muhammad Ahmad, Central Executive Committee Member, National Humanitarian Network. And listeners, today these guests are in connection with the World Humanitarian Day that is going to be observed on 19th of August, and to mark the day, this special interview will be conducted by our special correspondent Javed Khan Jadoon. So over to Javed Khan Jadoon.
Thank you very much, Vikas. As Vikas mentioned, the World Humanitarian Day is being observed on the 19th of this month. It is an extremely important occasion. Humanitarian Day is aimed at highlighting the issues which are related to several disasters and issues like upkeep of the refugees and the conflict zones, etc., which are affected, and ultimately a large population is displaced. So who comes to the help of these people, the United Nations? World Humanitarian Day is basically aimed at sensitizing the public opinion about these important, extremely important issues. We have been discussing several topics with the United Nations, and for the last couple of years, Neil is with us. Neil, we have covered almost every topic as far as UN is concerned. And this collaboration and this cooperation has been going on for the last 2 years after Radio Pakistan and United Nations Information Center concluded an agreement to broadcast and to produce joint programs. The effort or the objective was to highlight the activities of the world body in Pakistan. And there's no doubt that the United Nations has contributed so much in Pakistan, whether it is healthcare, education, or other delivery, other sectors such as, I mentioned health and education. This is not enough. Even in natural disasters, UN has been always there to assist Pakistan in so many ways. And I think this is the occasion once again that we can talk about the role of the UN agencies in Pakistan's development, in assisting Pakistan government, the civil society, the NGOs, and now this day, the World Humanitarian Day. Neil, what is the significance of the day and how does it affect Pakistan?
Well, I think the significance of the day is that there's more and more people who are finding themselves in the middle of crises being exposed to risk. Some of that is because of climate change. A good example of that was the floods in Chitral last year, where much of the valley was washed away because of unseasonal rains. An even more terrible example were the floods in Sindh. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in all of Pakistan in 2010, when the Secretary General flew over Pakistan at that time, he said he'd never imagined such an apocalyptic scene as tens of millions of people affected by flooding. So some of it is that. Some of it is about people increasingly living in vulnerable places, places where there's earthquakes. And that includes Pakistan as well. Again, in October of last year, Pakistan was affected by an 8.3 earthquake. Fortunately, not very deep, didn't affect so many people in the country, but in 2005, one of the most dramatic earthquakes ever in recent history took place in Pakistan. So, and then the third area is, unfortunately, many areas are affected by strife, by militancy, by conflict. I mean, right now in the world, tens of millions of people affected by the Syria crisis, people in South Sudan, where my colleague Heli was working till very recently. Mm-hmm. All of those are big issues, and that's why World Humanitarian Day was created, to draw attention to them, but also draw attention to the fact that a lot can be done. A lot can be done in preventing things, a lot can be done in preparing, but much can be better done in responding. And to do that, it's not about just the international community, it's primarily about the people who are most affected themselves and by the local governments.
Neil, when we talk about Pakistan, floods have been one of the major issues which Pakistan has always faced. Punjab particularly has been devastated in many instances, and Pakistan's economy suffered a lot because of the unexpected and sometimes expected flooding in the largest province of Pakistan, which is the breadbasket of the country. After 2010, Pakistan has made such a progress that even it has been able to manage some of the issues without requesting help from the global community. This is an important development as far as Pakistan's capacity building is concerned. But still, institutions like United Nations and the global community, you rightly mentioned the catastrophic earthquake of 2005, which was not manageable for Pakistan, and the United Nations and the global community extended unprecedented assistance to Pakistan, and Pakistan was able to manage that disaster, natural catastrophe, and was able to provide shelter once again, was able to provide schools and healthcare and so on and so forth. Pakistan is also one of the largest contributors to the UN peacekeeping mission, and that is recognized by the United Nations on so many occasions. Even the UN Secretary General acknowledged Pakistan's contribution. How do you see Pakistan emerging as a state which is capable of handling the natural disasters to an extent on its own and contributing towards UN humanitarian issues and contributing towards UN peacekeeping missions as well?
Yeah. I think if you look over the last 12 years, in fact, two of the biggest disasters that hit anywhere in the world hit Pakistan in 2005 and 2010. And from that, I think a lot was learned. I mean, one is that Pakistan has built up tremendous capacity within the country. I mean, the Pakistan NDMA is amongst the most respected organizations of its sorts in the world, and it's perhaps the leading
and
one in
it
Asia.
It came into being after the 2005 earthquake.
That's what I understand, yeah. There's other examples. I mean, the Pakistan Red Crescent, which works in cooperation with the International Red Crescent, Red Cross movement, is very strong. There's the National Humanitarian Network, which has come up over the last years as well, which brings together some of the best of Pakistan's civil society in responding. So there's a tremendous amount that Pakistan has done. And as you've drawn attention to, there's also a lot of capacity in the military through their own work, but also through many of the commanders having been involved with peacekeeping operations. And I think, as you know, that the chief military advisor to the United Nations, the Secretary General, is a Pakistani general as well. Now, that's mainly about peacekeeping, but that expertise is relevant for emergency response as well. So I think Pakistan has modeled a lot, and the world has also learned a lot from Pakistan, in that if you look at how our humanitarian system is structured now to respond to disasters, the cluster system, we call it, was inspired by the 2005 earthquake. It was the first time it was used. The last humanitarian reform, which we call the transformative agenda, also was in large part inspired by some of the difficulties actually with the international response to the 2010 floods, which was generally felt internationally to have not been adequate, and also to what happened in Haiti about the same time.
Heli, I talked about at the outset about the conflict zones around the world, and Pakistan, of course, is in the middle of fighting against terrorism, and we have seen a large number of people displaced from Fatah. And now, since we have made so many successes in North Waziristan, most of the terror sanctuaries have been destroyed there, and the process of resettlement is about to take place. In fact, as Neil last time mentioned, more than 50% of the internally displaced persons have been resettled back in their homes. And as given the facts, more than 65 million people were displaced worldwide by the end of 2015. It is a huge problem which the world is facing today. Like Neil mentioned, the situation in Syria and the influx of refugees into Europe and into United States, rather North America. But in Pakistani context, how important it is to learn from the lessons that once the conflict is over, the resettlement of the displaced people is extremely important, because unless the global community and the respective governments do their best to resettle them, the conflict actually doesn't end.
Thank you. And excuse me. Indeed, the level of displacement globally is and has been increasing, and unfortunately the duration of displacement is now longer than ever. It's an average of 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
17 years when people are displaced internally. And you're right that lots of good progress has been made on the return of the displaced people from Fatah, and almost 60% have returned so far, and some 770,000 people are still displaced and looking for returns. In many countries, millions of people are unfortunately still displaced, and I would say that there are some interesting and good lessons learned actually from Pakistan.
Yes.
To introduce to other countries how returns are coordinated, how issues of protection, access to basic services, and livelihoods and income generation would be addressed. I came recently from South Sudan, where we had 1.6 million displaced people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the progress made in Pakistan and the level of food assistance, the partners' capacity to address health and nutrition issues, both with IDPs but also with the host communities, is something that could be recognized even more widely.
Heli, we'll be talking about many more issues, but we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk to Mr. Muhammad Ahmad as well. He has some details about his domain, and we'll be talking about the holistic role of the United Nations, not only in Pakistan, but globally, in addressing these extremely important issues. And there's no doubt, Heli, that without United Nations contribution and assistance, I think things would be much more difficult for every country around the world.
Radio Pakistan's News and Current Affairs channel for in-depth discussions and analyses of top news stories of national and international significance. Tune into Current Affairs channel 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. for credible, accurate, and unbiased shades of opinion Keep listening to Radio Pakistan.
Radio Pakistan's News and Current Affairs Channel for in-depth discussion and analysis of top news stories of national and international significance. Tune into Current Affairs Channel 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. for credible, accurate and unbiased shades of opinion. Keep listening to Radio Pakistan.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. Ali, before I come to you, Mohammad Ahmad, you are the Central Executive Committee member, Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and Fatah, which is the conflict zone. It has remained a conflict zone for the last 15 years. And we have seen the influx of refugees into Pakistan after the Soviet invasion in Afghanistan. And Pakistan has been hosting more than 4 million Afghan refugees in Pakistan. And now, Anil, only last time we were discussing that about 1.5 million are registered Afghan refugees, and the same number is unregistered. Right. So, unofficially, about 3 million Afghan refugees still remain in Pakistan. How these refugees can be sent back with dignity and honor?
Thank you. We have been hosting these refugees for like more than now 3 decades, and now the repatriation, the government, like they want to repatriate the Afghan refugees to their country, but it's like it should be voluntary, first of all, and with dignity and respect. There are two imperatives, like one is humanitarian imperative, one is security imperative. We need to discuss like both. Humanitarian imperative is like the first and foremost thing is the return should be voluntary. But the security imperative is we need to regularize our border with the neighboring country, and the rest of the issues should be taken care, because we are there are problem on the border issue. So I must say that the repatriation should be voluntary and with dignity and respect and with proper arrangement on both sides, because we witness that there is a lack of proper arrangement on both sides, because there are like the people are here for the last 30 years and there are children in the schools, there are patients in the hospitals, they are not properly educated, where they will go and what arrangement there is in their point of return for them. So they should be properly educated by the government. UNHCR is like helping us in there.
Ahmad, we'll come back before we continue. We'll take a short break for the mid-hour headlines. Focus.
Foreign Office spokesman has reiterated Pakistan's stance of resolving all outstanding issues with India through dialogue. The UN High Commission for Human Rights has demanded access to occupied Kashmir to assess human rights violation by Indian forces. Federal Board of Revenue says its database is fully secure and allegations about tampering of its record are baseless. Music. Saudi Arabia has assured to resolve problems of stranded Pakistani workers in the kingdom. Rejected allegations of using Iranian military bases for airstrikes in Syria. First one-day international of two-match series between Pakistan and Ireland will be played at Dublin tomorrow.
Welcome back. Neil, the UN summit on refugees and migrants is going to take place on the 19th of September in New York. This provides an historic occasion and opportunity to the nations to work together in the spirit of shared responsibility and solidarity. But how this summit is going to help, practically speaking, the migrants issue and the refugees issue? Because we have seen the issue of refugees on a huge proportion in Europe and in America because of the Syrian crisis. Can it be handled in a way that we can say that now the global community is together in handling the situation and refugees somehow or the other are being taken care of? Of course, the issues of terrorism as well. So given this very complex situation, how the nations are going to tackle it?
Yeah, I mean, there's this saying that in every crisis there's an opportunity, and right now there's a tremendous crisis with respect to both refugees and migration in the world. And largely this is because a number of conflicts have been allowed to continue, and people who have been displaced from that haven't had opportunities to sometimes stay safely in the places where they had chose to stay safely first. And they don't see any end to those conflicts. So I think this crisis, by taking, or this conference, by taking a holistic view, provides a bit of an opportunity to end the, or not, maybe not end, but to reduce the severity of the current situation, as well as putting in place new policies that may prevent such a situation, at least such an extreme situation, developing in the future. So I think one element of it is that there should be more clear, direct assistance to countries that directly host refugees adjoining a conflict. And that is directly relevant to Pakistan. I mean, Pakistan had been hosting Afghan refugees, as we know, for 30 years. Right now, Turkey is the largest host country for refugees in the world.
And there's mostly Syrians.
Mostly Syrians. And there's a large number also in Lebanon and in Jordan. And for many years, many of our organizations have been trying to draw attention to the needs of those host countries, that they should be assisted more so they can help those refugees. And the refugees would often prefer to stay close to home. But because that assistance wasn't provided in adequate ways, that's one of the reasons why people have been pushing into Europe. So that's one element, is to ensure that host countries, the first countries hosting refugees, get the proper assistance. I think the second element of it is to ensure that countries where refugees try to claim asylum, such as what's been happening in Europe, that there's coordinated policies on that, rather than it all being the burden of one country. And hopefully, coming out of this meeting, there will be recognition that it's not just one European country, it's not just one Asian country, it's also countries like my home country, Canada, that should be taking larger amount of refugees. There has to be the burden sharing. But perhaps the most important thing, and I don't think it's going to be completely solved by the conference, but it draws attention to it, is the importance of preventing conflict and not letting things get to this extent. And hopefully the situation with the Syrian refugees shows people that it's important to have that political will at an earlier stage before letting it get to the stage where it is right now.
Neil, you mentioned the refugees, the situation in Pakistan. Pakistan has been hosting the Afghan refugees for the last 3 decades, and now the government has extended the date to December for the return of Afghan refugees to their homeland. I think it is becoming extremely difficult for Pakistan to continue to host them, given the economic situation, given the burden of even the internally displaced persons as well. Pakistan is in the middle of fight against terror. How long will it take? Situation might improve in Afghanistan, it might not. What is the answer to it? Will Pakistan keep on extending the dates of repatriation, or will there be a middle ground, or maybe the two countries, Afghanistan and Pakistan, together can find a way out where at least a portion of the refugees are returned to Afghanistan in the near future, after the expiry of this latest deadline?
Yeah, as my colleague Mohammed Ahmed was just saying, it's very important that there be dignified, voluntary returns. And to assist with that, as I'd mentioned last time I was on the air, UNHCR agreed to increase the cash grant available to each returning family from $200, as it was before, to $400 now. And as most families have about 6, 7, 8 people, I mean, that brings it up to maybe nearly $2,500. And there have been
for every returning family.
Well, assuming the family has 6 people or so, that's almost $2,500 per family, and that has made a difference. There are more families returning. There are more families returning voluntarily. It's very, very important, as I think was just highlighted on the news bulletin at 6 when I was preparing for this interview. The Pakistan government has that these returns be done in a way that are fair to the people, but also are done in a way that ensures that when they get into Afghanistan, that Afghanistan can receive them properly, but also that it doesn't create more instability in Afghanistan, because that has an effect on people in Pakistan as well. So I don't have an answer as to when it's going to end. I think that's up to people in Afghanistan primarily, but the current approach of encouraging voluntary returns, the current approach of engaging in improving both the peace and economic situation in Afghanistan are crucial, and the commitment has to continue, and the international commitment to support these people has to continue.
Heli, Neil has mentioned the assistance which the United Nations is providing to the returning Afghan families, which is about 2,000 to 2,500. Am I right, Neil?
Yeah.
Situation is worsening not only in Pakistan. You have been posted to so many countries, Sally. You have been to South Sudan, to Lebanon, and to Jordan, and to Syria as well, to Gaza and Somalia and so on and so forth. You have got the accumulated experience, and maybe you can make us understand in a better way the situation which prevails in Pakistan. The global community's attention, as Neil also mentioned, that has been drawn away from Pakistan into recent conflicts towards Syria and many other hotspots around the world. And the contribution of the global community is diminishing as far as Pakistan's situation is concerned, as far as the Afghan refugees in Pakistan are concerned. What is the way forward for Pakistan, for Afghanistan, and for the United Nations?
Yes, you're absolutely right. That the international media and world leaders have lately, over the last 4 or 5 years, focused their attention mainly on humanitarian situation in the Middle East, and in certain hotspots like South Sudan. And presently, the United Nations and our partners are in need of unprecedented $21.6 billion to meet the needs of some 95.4 million.
That's globally.
That's globally, over the 40 countries, and every country is very much underfunded. Here in Pakistan, our humanitarian strategic plan is presently 32% funded. Our funding requirement for the IDP and the host community and other identified support is about $440 million, and only 32% is funded. I think it's very important that we have a very transparent system. We coordinate well, be as cost-effective as we can, working closely with all the partners, and unfortunately make some very difficult decisions sometimes when we have to prioritize the business we will be able to address. But for broader information dissemination, I think it's very important to focus on the success stories, to see what has been achieved, what the humanitarian partners, government, we've been able to achieve in terms of refugee operations and the return of the IDPs, gender issues, and the follow-up on the World Humanitarian Summit commitments and the way forward in a transitioning from humanitarian operations into development.
IDPs, you mentioned. You win the war against terror, and then the process of resettlement of the internally displaced persons comes. And I think it is so important that these people are once again resettled in their homelands. Even last time, Neil, we were discussing that rebuilding their lives is important, so that they can become once again a productive part of the society, the school system, the healthcare system, the sporting activities, so on and so forth. Heli is a big task for any country. People say do more. Well, Pakistan has done what no other country has done in the world. The Americans stayed in Afghanistan for over a decade, spent more than $1 trillion on the warfare, on war efforts, and still we see the militancy still thriving in Afghanistan. And Pakistan, at one point in time, people believed that we might not be able to defeat terrorism, and there were so many skeptics in Pakistan when there were terror incidents taking place on a daily basis in Pakistan. And then the operations of USP, or the operation against terrorism, started in North Waziristan, and now fortunately enough that Pakistan has become comparatively a safe country, while incidents are taking place around Pakistan, in Turkey, in Bangladesh, in Afghanistan, and in European countries, and even in the United States of America. So I think there's a need for the global community to recognize Pakistan's efforts in the war on terror. And then I think global community, many observers believe that, needs to stay engaged with Pakistan in the resettlement process, so that the extremists and the terrorists do not find any space, any vacuum, and they may not be able to regroup once again. Because we know that the ongoing war on terror is not a war which can be won in a specific time period. So my question is, Heli, given your experience in so many conflict zones, that the resettlement process and the rebuilding of the lives of the displaced people is extremely important one. You believe that it is the responsibility of the global community as well to stay engaged with Pakistan.
Yes, and I think that the importance of identifying that what has been achieved already and what we still need. People want to go home. They want to have a dignified volunteer return home.
And rebuild their lives once
rebuild
again.
Rebuild their lives. Have access to
because everything
services.
Is destroyed. They have got no homes left.
Send
there.
Children
no,
to school.
No livestock. And,
income
and no
generation.
Schools, and no
job opportunities.
Yes.
And establish normal life as we all want. Day-to-day normal activities. Go to market. Have access to health services. Send the children to school. And
yes.
I think that is our challenge to all of us, that when the returns are successful, we have to make them sustainable.
Yes.
And continuous access to income generating and livelihood opportunities.
Your take on that, Neil?
Well, what's important is that there be continuity. Too often in situations where you've had displacement, the commitment sort of flags off after people go back. And then sometimes those areas become unstable again because people don't have opportunities.
Yes.
And when I was up in the federally administered tribal areas not so long ago, the people, the village elders said, what we need is one, education to keep our young people in school, and second, we need jobs, especially for the young people, otherwise mm-hmm. they're going to get frustrated. I mean, my colleague Mohammed Ahmed might have something to add on this because his organization is mm-hmm. on the ground mm-hmm. involved with supporting these returns and supporting the recovery, particularly education right now.
Ahmad, are the internally displaced persons getting the attention which they deserve?
If I answer it categorically, so I will say not enough, basically. FATA, as far as FATA is concerned, so it was not an ideal place to live before as well. The social services was not that much good before the militancy, but it was further deteriorated after this militancy and this crisis. Now there is nothing. Although government has allocated 100 billion in this budget, but that is not enough. You were right to ask about the international support, because whatever has been happened, we were not responsible for, but the people suffered a lot because of the international or global politics were here. Now, this is also the responsibility of the global community to help us, to not only to rebuild, but I would rather say to build back better than what we had before. Because the situation before was responsible for the for creating this mess in that region. So we need to build it back better. And for that matter, the government of Pakistan should focus
on this issue. Conditions were ripe for the to become the area become the breeding ground for extremists and terrorists. Because of the conditions.
Exactly. And the global community should assist us. We expect so from them. But I will request the media as well. Because for the last 2 years, we have seen that, we have observed that the issues of the displaced people were not that much highlighted in the media as it was required. And for that matter, we couldn't gather support from internally as well as from the external sources.
Mm-hmm.
So media should play their due role in highlighting these issues, the issues of the return and the issues of the resettlement and rehabilitation in that very area, especially focusing on the social service delivery, so we may not face the situation again and again. So what I mean to say that as a nation, as a government of Pakistan, an international community, because FATA is a hot spot anyway, and if there will be a trouble in FATA, there will be trouble in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and there will be trouble, and like it will be, the whole world will suffer. So it's like our collective responsibility to make the FATA a place to live with dignity, with all the social services available, with access to education, because acceptability, we are working there. And let me tell you, there is a myth that the people are against education.
Okay.
We have been working in FATA for the last so many years, and we are still running like 105 schools in FATA. There is no issue of acceptability. There is an issue of access now. There is a demand, but there's the supply is not there. So we need to work on the supply side now. And we expect the UN system, they are helping us. UN is helping a lot. Even right now, the Pakistan Humanitarian Pool Fund, they have invested a lot in Fatah, and they are helping the return. But as Neil mentioned, once the return completed, like out of sight, out of so we need to have a proper plan starting from the return to the development of the area, and all the stakeholders should contribute in that.
Halid, before we take a short break, Ahmad has talked about the role of media. When we come back, we'll be talking about, we'll take your perspective about the effective role of media in this particular regard. Take a short break.
Radio Pakistan's news and current affairs channel for in-depth discussions and analyses of top news stories of national and international significance. Tune into Current Affairs Channel, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. for credible, accurate and unbiased shades of opinion. Keep listening to Radio Pakistan.
Radio Pakistan's News and Current Affairs Channel for in-depth discussion and analysis of top news stories of national and international significance. Tune into Current Affairs Channel, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. for credible, accurate and unbiased shades of opinion. Keep listening to Radio Pakistan.
Welcome back. Halid, Ahmad was talking about the effective role of media in this regard as well. We have talked about every aspect, but no doubt the role of media is extremely important. Important in the sense that it sensitizes the public opinion towards such important issues. Pakistani media is a vibrant media. In the private sector, we have got about 50 channels operating right now. And these channels do focus on these important issues, but maybe not to the extent one would like them to be. The global media, you have seen the shift in approach and shift in focus towards other flashpoints. In the lack of global media's interest in this particular region, as far as the humanitarian disasters are concerned or the refugee issue is concerned, how badly it is affecting it?
I think you rightly pointed out that the local media has been very vibrant and addressing issues both externally and internally. I think the global media focus tends to be more on the catastrophic side and less on the human interest side, to identify success stories or the human story behind what people actually need, but focus more on the actual suffering and the catastrophic side. I think it's important that we all would work together to identify the areas where the media informs the people who are affected and to whom we are accountable about the situation, and for example in IDP questions on returns and the opportunities, and then at the national level and international level we maintain the focus that what is the process, what are the needs, humanitarian needs, development needs and the funding requirements.
Halid, other hot spots you have served in so many areas. Do you see any difference between the Pakistani perspective as far as media is concerned and the other hotspots where you served, represented United Nations, and do you think that more needs to be done in Pakistan case?
I think that the Pakistani media has been very open, actually, on the situation and addressing the issues on various levels, and has a very strong focus also on the preparedness when it comes into disaster preparedness and risk reductions. I think that there would be an opportunity further improve and enhance the both ways communications, that how do we communicate to the population that are affected, that they have all the information required, let's say for returns or for disaster preparedness, and then how we channel it to the international media and global fora.
Neil, your thoughts, your final thoughts about the whole situation, briefly, the role which the UN has played so far in Pakistan, as far as the refugees are concerned, the Afghan refugees, and the internally displaced persons are concerned. And Neil, how optimistic you are that the global community will stay engaged in terms of providing resources and the other assistance which is required in Pakistan?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that the bulk of help that people get is actually themselves. And if you communicate well, if you have other citizens within the community understanding what they need, empathizing with them, that often is the most effective. The international community, as Mohammed Ahmad said, I think has a particular responsibility in the current situation with the people who have been displaced and who are returning to Fatah because of the political dimension of it. Whether that's, I think because of that, there is going to be a continued support for them. Whether that support is going to be adequate, I think depends in part on how well those returns go, but also depends a bit on how well we do our job in trying to continue to bring attention. Mm-hmm. Because as I've said before, it's a bit of a harder message to invest in progress, because there actually has been progress on the returns, and to maintain that investment, it's a bit harder to communicate than to say, well, there's immediate need and people are starving, you need to help them. To say you should be helping people return and get on their feet is a harder message. So we've got to do a job together with the Pakistan media, our partners in Pakistan government and Pakistan civil society, who are very eloquent, to make that continued case internationally, but I think also within Pakistan itself.
Anil, it's never enough when you talk about these extremely important issues in Pakistan and globally as well. It is an ongoing discussion, and I hope that the partnership between Radio Pakistan and United Nations will continue, and we will be able to highlight these extremely important issues in our coming sessions. And with this, we come to the end of this very productive discussion. Thank you so much, Neil Bune, United Nations Resident Coordinator, Humanitarian Coordinator, UNDP Resident Representative in Pakistan, so on and so forth. And Heli Uskila, am I right, Heli?
Yes, absolutely right.
And she has worked in so many hot spots, and she gave a perspective about Pakistan as well. Mr. Mohammed Ahmad has been also very, very useful in giving us extremely important information about the humanitarian issues as far as the refugees are concerned. And I hope that we have been able to educate our listeners about this important issue, and we will continue to discuss it. And thank you so much. I'm Javed Khan Jadoon, your host, saying Allah Hafiz from Talk Show Perspective, and we hope to have this session once again with Neil and his colleagues. Thank you so much, Neil.
Thank you.